Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and the dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Today, I'm proud to bring you The Art of Healing with Kak Young. Greetings and welcome, Kak. How are you?
Thank you, Hercules. Greetings and welcome to you, too.
Thank you. Your guest is here.
Fantastic. Well, tonight, my guest is Wendy Garrett. Now, I have so many accolades for her that I can't even count them, and I don't know where to start. First of all, I've been interviewed by the fabulous Wendy on her show, Wendy's Coffee House, about four times. Now, and it's a real honor to be on her show because she does an incredible job of interviewing. She asks great questions. She actually reads your material. She's so smart, and just keeping up with her energy is like going to the gym already. So not only are her interviewing skills phenomenal, but she follows up your interview with an amazing article that she's written about you, your book, and the moments of the interview that touched her. She is non-stop, this woman. Network quality journalism, and she has two programs that she handles, Conscious Living on Empower Radio and Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO. Now, Wendy's Coffee House has been described as a quirky mix of interviews showcasing individuals with a passion for discovery and a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, or unusual. Topics include, but are not limited to, the paranormal, UFOs, PSI, NDE, reincarnation, past lives, ghosts, haunting, consciousness, and extraordinary encounters, where for Wendy, reality is relative. So without further ado, let's get her on the show. Welcome, Wendy Garrett.
Hey there, thank you. Wow, that was amazing, the intro. I feel like I should live up to it.
Oh, you will. Listen, every time I told someone, oh, Wendy Garrett's going to be on my show, they go, wow, she is so interesting. Like there is a cult following you have out there of people who just adore you. So welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Well, I got the second shot, so I'm still here, which is wonderful. That was worth waiting for.
Indeed, and you got a new puppy, I hear.
Yes, we're in the training phase, and of course that means I'm being trained to know when the puppy wants in and out and all that good stuff, and she's adorable, but she's right now ruling the roost, and I've got two cats and a dog who are wondering what the heck happened.
Yeah, what happened to their universe?
Yeah. So in 2 weeks, it'll calm down.
Well, you sure in 2 weeks?
I'm banking on it.
Okay. All right, so yeah. Wendy, now I have built you up as a powerhouse. Everything I said was true. You write books, you conduct interviews, you run many websites and blogs. You have a very large following. Now, catch us all up on how you got to where you are and why you did all of that. I'm fascinated by your life.
Well, in a nutshell, because I don't specialize. And I think that's probably it. I like to try a lot of different things, and And instead of becoming, you know, narrowly focused on one and just excelling there, I decided, you know what, I'm going to do the things I like to do, the things that I have fun doing, and then just see where it goes, see where it leads me. And what happened was I found myself doing a whole lot of things without intending to. Does that make sense?
Of course it does. You started in news, though, didn't you?
At the beginning, I wanted to be in news broadcasting, and I was going to flip to television, but I liked audio so much more because of the storytelling factor. I grew up with radio, and so I remembered if my DJ wasn't there that morning, then my whole day was shot, and I was probably 10 or 11. And so I remembered, yeah, it was awful. So I remember the impact that that had, and I thought, you know what? If I have to choose, I really like the spoken word. And I, at the same time, I couldn't imagine myself being stuck in a little room. I thought it was claustrophobic, and how could I do that for a living? Well, that's I ended up being a DJ, a news person, in a little room and having fun because it was a theater of the imagination. And that's where you just play. And so I had some good advice along the way, and some of the program directors at the very beginning said that, you know, you just talk to whoever it is, the microphone, like it's your best friend or like it's someone you're talking to having coffee. And that's basically what I started doing.
So you started with Empower Radio, is that correct? And then you moved on to KCMO, or you do both now?
Okay. Well, I started back in 1980 in a Quapaw, Oklahoma is the place I drove through to get to Miami, Oklahoma, to be on a radio station, and that was while I was in college. Then I moved to Kansas City, started at a country station, and that was in 1983 or 84, somewhere in there, and I've worked in radio since then. So I've worked on various stations. And Power Radio, I did... It's been 10 years, so it's a decade. And then I had been on KCMO as a news reporter, early 90s. And so it was journalism. That was my background. And I was going to continue in journalism until 9/11. And when I was on the air for 9/11, I decided there was nothing I could do at that time. And they came into the newsroom showing me or telling me, a little slip of paper and said, a plane has gone into the towers. I'm like, and this is radio, so sometimes you play dirty jokes, cruel jokes on each other. And I wasn't sure if they were trying to, you know, hook me, and I could see the television from where I was. And I realized, oh, okay, this just in. And that was when I decided there was nothing I could do as a radio news anchor in a moment of crisis like that I felt would be empowering to other people, because I would just be repeating something that I was going to have to trust the source that was accurate. And I thought I would rather get into the telling stories from real people, real lives, and then I wanted to go into the metaphysical stuff because that's where my experience is. So it was a switch, and I stepped out at that point right after 2001.
So, all right, so you have radio in your blood, it's coursing through your veins, and then you have another love, and that is interviewing and bringing the best out of people. You seem to have a real talent for getting people to talk on a higher level. Tell me a little about that.
Okay. I mean, this is, thank you. Say, I appreciate that. That's really nice to hear. I don't know. I just talk to people, and I just, I want them to feel good about what they're doing. And so if I can ask good questions to inspire somebody to maybe reveal something that they feel comfortable with, but maybe they're not going to talk to somebody else about because it's not the right venue or the right time or the right audience, then we have a good conversation. And it goes from there. And it's really cool now because of the global audience and with podcasting. And that's what happened when I went to Empower. I'd already been doing a show called, it was on Talk Shoe, one of the very beginning things, like Blog Talk Radio. And I was doing a show there that allowed me to have a forum, and I realized I couldn't compartmentalize myself enough to keep track of the forum. I needed to just be able to do interviews to focus on my guest and give them the best way to present the material and again have a conversation. It was more for me important to just talk and hopefully connect with somebody.
Well, and you do that so well. Now you, but you're not just an ordinary human being having a conversation over coffee. You have some other connections to other places. You're comfortable with the paranormal and in psychic worlds. Did I read something about a spider once?
Okay, that's probably by Brown Recluse. There's no easy way to tell this, so I'll just get into it. The spider, I had no idea I had been bit. And a week later, I found out and confirmed that it had been a spider bite, Brown Recluse. And I'd gone to a plastic surgeon, and I knew what they were going to do. They would cut it out. That was typically because this venom gets into you, then they try and either use a steroid or something to kind of contain it and then take it out, remove it. Well, it's systemic. I knew all this intuitively. And then I also got on the internet ASAP to see if I could find a Brown Recluse, what remedy, whatever. And the amazing thing about that was I did find something that dealt with it, and it's taking out, you know, at the source that you try and get the venom neutralized. And so that was one of the things that I did that got me the package pretty much overnight. I didn't order it overnight. Somehow it showed up. I was astounded. So I was working on that. But I also had visions. And during this time, there were two or three other people I knew of who were getting who had been bitten. One did have the surgery. Another one was hospitalized. So there were a lot of little scare stories. And when my mom saw me, she said, I look like death warmed over because it's a shock to your system. And especially it had been in my system a week before I really understood. I had a goose egg at the back of my knee and the bite had been on the front. But I didn't register at the time. Later on, I remember it feeling like this little sting. But the vision was that I was in a room with a Harry Potter-sized spider. It's a ginormous spider. And in the room, I had about the size of a basketball, a white ball, and I knew it was an egg. I knew this belonged to the spider. And so I handed it to her, and I said, you know, you can have this back. You need this. And the guides were asking me, spirit guides, why I did that. Why did I give her the egg? And I said, because I didn't need it. And she hadn't done anything to hurt me. It wasn't intentional. It was just what spiders do. And so there was no harm, no foul. Okay? And with that, then I was told, because of this from the guides, you will have no further quarrel with spider. And it healed. It did take a year. And what I did during that time was cut my sugar, cut carbs. I switched my diet to get into, I don't want to be a doctor here, but I will say I did some other things that helped neutralize the toxin in my system. But I could still feel, because they're known to tunnel once it gets in, and then show up somewhere else. And so with that, I was really trying to just shut it down and give it, not giving anything to feed on. And so then a year later, when I felt this little activity, I thought, okay, I got to keep up the diet. And that was it. But it did go away and it did clear. And then somebody else told me, which I didn't know at the time, that when the brown recluse bites you, they lay an egg. And then that inside, as your body starts to do the necrotizing, it hurts. It really, really hurts. And what I did with that was apple juice. And apple juice neutralized the pain. I was shocked. But these things were given to me and internally, intuitively, so I could work through it. And I'm sorry, I'm also watching this dog, so I'm pacing.
That's okay. So you are no, it's adding to the drama of your story. It's very nice.
Okay.
It's good. So now, did you put the apple juice in you or on you?
I drank the apple juice.
Yeah,
because what I was using on the outside was a charcoal to help neutralize the top and then pull it from your system.
Oh.
You want to get as much of the poison out of your system, and so you do something that will draw it out. And then inside the apple juice, within 20 minutes, that pain was neutralized at the site. And that really made a difference. But it's that alkaline. It goes, you know, it changes your system, or at least that's what it did for me. That's what I'm saying. I don't want to get into this, you know, say prescribing. But for me, these were the things that I was intuitively guided to do and told, here, do this. And so I did. The other thing is, if you can't heal yourself, you're not going to be any good at healing anybody else. So that was part of my learning, that if something like this happened to me, then I would have what I needed to get through it.
Well, now that's great. Now, you say that, you know, you were told. I assume you're talking about your spirit guides or your angels or some other entity beyond.
Yes, I call them spirit guides.
Okay.
How many do you have? As many as I need.
As many as you need, I see. A baseball team, a football team.
You know, we have numerous guides, and they're for different purposes. So if you need somebody for healing, then that's what shows up. If I need somebody for a quick assist in terms of I've been attacked, what do I do now? That's a different one, okay? So it just depends. At one point, I know I had 8 guides. I had names for them. I don't do that now because it's, you know, it only makes sense to me. And so I know a primary guide, and I know others who help me with writing, and I know the energy, which is the energy of the nightlight, who isn't a guide. It's a completely different entity.
Now, how did you discover these entities?
Well, from the time I was a kid, I had memories, and I had just awareness that there were others around. And when I was, I can't remember, about 10 or 11, I was with a girl who were having the typical overnight, you know, and talking about, I don't know why, but this is what came up, probably because we had Sunday school, Bible school camp. But she asked me if I believed in the Holy Spirit. And, you know, we're just talking overnight in bed. And I said, I'm thinking, why wouldn't I? I said, of course, yes. And at that time, my whole body lit up. I remembered what I called it was a glowworm experience, because I felt I just glowed from head to toe. And apparently it wasn't external. I asked her if she felt it or she saw it. And she thought I was nuts, okay? So we didn't talk about that anymore, but I never forgot it. And I knew at that point that there was more here. And I had an imaginary friend when I was young, until I was 4 and a half, and that was Hegel. And Hegel flew out the window. I told my mom Hegel flew out the window, and I never talked about Hegel again. So, you know, I had other experiences knowing. And then, like, at one point, my girlfriend and I, this is when I was about 16, we were out, and I knew this place was on our property, like the back of my hand. And so I said that, I can't remember how they showed up, but these two guys showed up, and they're saying they're going to meet my uncle, and there's a creek crossing that they're driving across to the back field. And I hear one of my guides say, run. And they seemed harmless. They were very nice, friendly. They were probably about, I'm guessing, maybe 18 or 19. Old enough to be wise and also a threat. But at that point, I didn't think anything of it. And then when the guide said, run, I told my girlfriend, run. And she looked at me like I was joking, and I started running, and because we didn't have time to waste. And we ran to a place I knew would be safe. There was a clearing with 8 cabins, and we stood beside a cabin. And within a few minutes at the most, these guys came back, and they looked for us. They drove very slowly around this area trying to figure out where we went. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And, of course, she did something like sneeze or, you know, make a noise, and I was ready to, But it was a gravel road, so they couldn't have heard us. It's just that panic of, oh, no, don't give us away. But the guy had said, run. And so that was an out loud. I've had those things where there were periods of time when it was traumatic. There could be panic. And like that, I had no clue. I wasn't afraid. Nothing was wrong. But I got that little word, and it was like, okay, all right, done. You don't have time to question. You only have time to act. And that was the action.
So is this, a lot of people have a sense of intuition, like, ooh, don't drive down that road, or, you know, turn left, and then they miss an accident. So this is bigger than intuition. This is more than intuition.
No, it's an assistant. It's somebody, something, someone, another being who's a helper and who is there if you need it. I don't know why other people don't report the same kind of thing, because to me this is, it's necessary. In times of crisis, these things happen. And so it's been, for me, just a knowing that it's there. I don't know when it's going to show up or when it's going to happen for that. But there was a time when I had been, somebody broke into my apartment and I had been attacked. I was able to get the person off of me and throw them over across the room. It's one of those times when you think you can't do something, and all of a sudden you have this power. And I was able to throw the person and then run out. And as I run out, it's a three-story building, and I'm on the third floor balcony. The bottom is cement. And I'm thinking, as this person comes running out, all right, I'll end this and I'll push him over the side, because I had all the strength. At that point, I had an enormous amount of power. And so as I'm thinking of doing it and getting ready to make my move, because he has to go by me to get to the stairs, I hear out loud, karma. And I'm like, now you're here? Karma. And so I let him go. And I realized that at the time, it had more to do with I had defeated the perpetrator. I no harm, no foul. And if I did anything at that point, I would be the aggressor. So that was a thing of, that was karma. Our engagement, our inaction, our whatever it was, our appointment, everything had been concluded. So there was past life issues that went with that, and whatever he took forward was what our encounter was, that I had thrown him with an immense amount of force. And I know the force was given to me to do that as a self-protection, not as an adversary or a protection. I wasn't supposed to use it to harm. Does that make sense?
Sure. Now, do you have you ever not listened to this voice and said?
No. Why?
Well, because a lot of people would doubt it and say, what is that? Do I have an echo in my head or something? A lot of people wouldn't trust it as you do. So some people would say, no, I'm doing this my way, and their ego would get in the way of this supernatural connection.
I'm guessing they're no longer here. Because the time, what I'm talking about is there's no saying no. You know, there's no saying no. If I said no, I would still be in that bed and he had a knife. Okay?
Sure.
From the beginning. I had help from the beginning, not just the moment where it said karma. It was like everything was coming to me, rocket speed. Thoughts, ideas, insights, the whole nine yards, the whole time he was there and telling me he had a knife. I didn't know.
Wow.
It was one of my guys in the kitchen. So, you know, I had to know and think and operate with extreme caution. But I knew at that point, if I was going to die, I would die on the way out. I wouldn't die staying there. And again, no harm, no foul. Because if I had done what I had, my impulse was to clean the slate. I would just do this and protect other people so they wouldn't have to be attacked or go through this. And
right.
That was my goal, but it wasn't my job. I didn't know. Possibly because of this encounter, he may have changed. He may have turned a corner, a page. Something might have clicked and connected. I don't know, and I won't know. But I know that at that point, I was supposed to end it, and so I did. I don't, you know, the thing is, yeah, you can question this or people can question this, but if they're doing that, then they're not on the path. Then, it won't come. It won't come. You question that, and like if I hadn't run with those two guys, and when I watched them methodically check and try and see where we were, we didn't have any weapons. We were in swimsuits. We were swimming in a creek, and they were older. They were stronger. But I knew that place like the back of my hand. I knew where to hide. But I also knew when it said run, it wasn't a, well, la-di-da-di-da, let's trolley up the path.
It was, get out of there.
Yeah. It was, you don't have time to question. And my girlfriend, when she was looking at me like I was joking, that was how sudden it was. We had been talking, having fun. And these guys came up. They said, hi. We said, hi, all that. You know, we're looking for your uncle. Yeah, great. They weren't looking for my uncle.
No, guess not.
They weren't. Well, no. And the thing is, they knew him, but they weren't supposed to be there. And so I found that out later. But those kinds of things, you just have to understand that there is this help if you allow it. And if you suspend your disbelief, your doubt, in some ways it's almost like it's an arrogance, you know, that you have all the answers. I don't have all the answers, but when I need help, I get it.
Now, do you consult this team? I guess we'll just call it Team Wendy. Do you consult your team? Do you consult them and say, hey, you know, I'm planning a large gathering for 400. Can you help me plan this? Do you go there?
I think that's kind of trivial. No. No, part of it is to go and trust that when it's there, it will be there. You know, when you need it, it will show up. I ask, what can I do? How can I help? How can I be of service? Is there something I need to be aware of? What might I do that will help this, that will make this better, that will improve? Where can I look for assistance or guidance? And is there someone I need to call or, you know, something like, I'll ask that. But they don't live our lives. All this stuff that we do here is minutia. You know, if I want to, you know, have a party, well, then that's my prerogative. But
right.
They're not here, you know, riding shotgun saying, don't invite so-and-so. It'll be really boring.
Yeah. No, I was thinking more like, okay, I mean, shall I have it on this date or that date? Will it rain or will there be wind or, you know, but they're not that mundane.
No. And when I did have a wedding, my wedding back in the day, just after I got out of college, I got married. It had rained. I believe it was either 8 or 9 weeks. Every weekend it rained. And I told my mother-in-law, this was a date. It's an outside wedding. And she's like, no. Having 1,000 heart attacks, knowing it was going to rain. On my day, it was beautiful, and it didn't rain. And it was so green because we had so much rain. There's something else that goes with that, where there's an intuition of, if I pick the day or if I pick the time, then it's okay. That's not the guide. That's something about the intuition, knowing that, okay, this is how it's going to work. And so I have avoided things that could have been catastrophic because of knowing about okay, this is where I'm supposed to be at this time, and that's where I will be, and I trust that. But it wasn't like I planned it and said, okay, nothing's going to happen. I just, okay, this is going to be the best day, and this will work. And then that was it. It will work, and it did. So there's just a difference. It's not trying to control it. It's allowing it to manifest. And
to manifest.
You know, all, yeah. So it's, there's this big, I think, push or rush when people are trying to affirm something. And you're not working with the energy. You're trying to push it, manipulate it, make it subjugate it. And that isn't how it works. It works.
Yeah, make it behave. Make it behave. All right, well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the difference and how you do work with it as opposed to, I don't know, use it for divination purposes, sell it to other people, any of that. Let's talk about how you work with this pure energy.
Okay. What happens is when we have a very big desire and we're attached and we are homed in, tuned into something, really, really want something to happen. It may or may not be for our best interest, for our highest good. We don't always know that. So when there are stumbling blocks, hurdles, things break, things don't turn out the way you want, then the best thing is to redirect your energy. What is it about this that isn't in my best interest? Instead of saying, well, I'm going to get it one way or the other. This is what I want. Well, there's a whole lot of heartache that goes along with that.
Yeah.
But if you just say, okay, it's not right for me. It's not right for me. But there's so many ways to learn. And sometimes learning is getting what you want and then finding out it really wasn't what you needed. And the Rolling Stones wrote an article, a song about that, so you know.
Yeah.
I'm not the first one to figure that out.
May not be what you need. Yeah.
Right. But it's all learning. So there's no judgment. It's just saying that, you know, for what my experience has been, is that when there's a block or a hurdle, then there's something that it's not the right time. And it's only meant to say, and sometimes it's a delay, not a complete derail. Other times it's a derail. And it may be because the other people that need to be there to support you aren't going to be there. So it won't work the way you would hope it would work. And so you just let go and say, okay, it's not the right time. But there's so much in our society of saying, okay, I have to do this on this time and that on that time, and I have to do all these requirements. I have to fill this card with all these things that I'm supposed to be successful. Well, that's not your game. That's the game of society. All right? So once you buy into that, then you've lost your path. You've lost your track because you're doing somebody else's drama, you know, and then, of course, you're not going to live up to it because it doesn't work the way they say it should work. And once you do that, once you sign on to all the things that say that you're successful, then that's that to me is a derailing. Now, it may mean that things will happen slower and you won't have the big accolades and you won't have the big, you know, gold star. But in the long run, what are you going to do with all that anyway? It's external. You can't do anything with it. And even if you say, well, I've got this and I've got that, well, what does it matter? Instead of saying, I am. I can do this. And it doesn't matter if nobody else knows it. You know it. And that's where the power is. So that's what I look at in terms of, do I seek to, you know, to sell somebody about this that I do? No, it's mine. I don't know that it'll work for them. Matter of fact, I've seen it not work for other people. And they've made sure it didn't work. It wasn't their way. You have to figure out your own recipe, your own process. And then things will work. And then sometimes you have to let go and say, okay, I've done that once. I don't need to do it 20 times. In other words,
so how do you know the
difference? Go ahead.
I was going to say, so how do you know the difference between letting go and giving up?
Giving up?
Yeah. Some people just get to a point, oh, this is too hard, I'm done. As opposed to, there's letting go, which is dissolving your ego on a certain level and just going with the higher good, the higher plan, and say, okay, well, I may not see the end result here, but I'm going to go this way. As opposed to somebody who just says, well, this is hard, I don't want to do this, I'm going to take all my marbles and go home. How do you know the difference?
I'm listening to your voice. I'm hearing the difference in your voice. Your energy.
I do that. I use different voices.
Yeah. Right, but that's it. That's a display. That's a demonstration of how energy works. So when somebody does that and they're not conscious of their energy, then anybody can see the energy of self-defeat, of martyrdom, of pitiful me, of somebody who really doesn't at any way, any part of the process intend to own their own power. So they just say, it's not the way you did it. I'm not going to mirror that energy. I'm not going to mirror that. I don't want to own it. But that's the thing is, once you take that energy and turn it inward like that, then you are self-destructing. And so that's giving up. Letting go is saying, that isn't my purpose. I don't need it. There's no attachment. There's no, it's a completely different way of acknowledging you have the power to say, this is not in my best interest. Okay, I let it go. I don't need it. It isn't mine. It's not that I reject it. It's not that I don't like it. It's not for me. It isn't in sync. It doesn't have the energy that supports me, that sustains me, that helps me evolve and grow. So I can move on. And say, thank you for the lesson. Thank you. I don't need this. This is okay. I'm going to let go. That was a great lesson. It was a great learning, but I don't need that. And so when you realize that, there's no problem. There's no attachment. There's no defeat. There's a liberation and a sense of, wow, oh, I had no idea. That was society's role for me. That wasn't mine. That was my social programming. It wasn't my own soul programming. So that's how you know. How does it make you feel? And then if you're telling other people, well, I just don't want to play. Okay, that's fine. You don't want to play. You don't have to play. But when you're doing it with that energy, it says a lot more about you than what you're letting go of.
So you have this. Yeah, well, yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, you have this amazing way of operating on the human level, but you also have these guides from beyond that you trust and have that are there. And so you have created for yourself a sense of security about you living your life according to a higher plan. I mean, that must be a great comfort going through life.
Well, it sure wasn't at the beginning. In terms of getting jobs and that kind of thing and hearing, no, you are not the right fit for this, and no, we don't have any. If you look at the people, the women in radio, all right, on radio, especially on talk radio, how many women are there? So in my business, I tended to somehow navigate and steer myself toward a really challenging career and placement. And at the same time, I honed my skills. I continued to do what I did, even though there were no opportunities. And when I saw an opportunity, it was filled by somebody who was already there and not necessarily a fit for me. And so I continued to do what I did my way, and not because I was trying to prove a point, but because I thought, well, I can get better. I can still do these things and do them in a way that I can feel that I've done the best that I could at the time that I was able to do it. And you always go back and say, I could have done it better. Well, at least I do. But at the same time, it was like, okay, just because I can't do it there doesn't mean I can't do it. And so I went into in doing different kinds of jobs because I found jobs that I felt comfortable in, that I had fun at, I worked at Eddie Bauer in retail for 9 years, had a ball, loved it. Now, I didn't like the corporate aspect of it, what you have to put up with that kind of stuff. But that part of it wasn't my problem. I enjoyed the merchandise, the quality of the merchandise, and I could sell it because I wore it and I believed in it. Not that it's just you go through periods like that and find something that you enjoy. I also worked for department stores and sold cosmetics and perfume, fragrances, because I enjoyed it. I love fragrance. It makes you feel good. And I could figure out what people liked and point them in the right direction and say, this is one you will like, because I knew, you know, some people like spices, some people like the citrus. It's all about attitude, emotion, sense, and those are things that are easy to find for people to feel a pick-me-up. So those wardrobe and scents. So I went that direction while I was still writing, and I was still experiencing all this paranormal stuff. So that was basically, those were my jobs to just kind of keep the bills going while my experience was completely on a different level, and that was with the guides.
The guides, and then you also have seen some paranormal activity, and you understand that there are other beings out there, and so talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, okay, there's a little bit of everything. I think we talked about fairies at one point, and
yes.
This is something that, okay. So when I was a kid, I used to play by myself out in the yard, and my Barbies all lived underground, which was really odd because, you know, Barbies supposed to have this nice castle and house, all that good stuff. No, my Barbies were rural and urban, and they camping Barbies. Anyway, they were always dirty, and I thought, you know, I had to have had some influence. I think Hago had a part of that, but the fairies didn't make a reappearance in my life until maybe it was 10 years ago, and I'm out in the yard, and I'm pulling weeds just along the edge of the house. And this is in the middle of Kansas City. You know, this is in a nice area where I wouldn't have expected to have fairies in the city. I know better now. And so, but anyway, I think that was a reminder to me that they're everywhere. Anyway, at that time, I'm pulling weeds, and all of a sudden there's some clouds above, and it looks like it could be a little rain somewhere. They have a little the potential to rain, and I hear these little voices, and all I can say is it's like, you know, hearing something on helium, and these high-pitched voices, and they're singing, "Mother, bring the rain that we might drink," and it's almost like a chant song, "Mother, bring the rain that we might drink, Mother, bring the rain that we might drink," and I'm like, wow. And it was so neat, because I'm thinking, oh, I'm really a part of this. I didn't see them, but I heard that. And then what happened was the clouds moved over just a little bit to the south toward me, this cloud line, and there were sprinkles in the yard. And that was all it was. It was a sprinkle. And I thought, that's all they wanted. They just wanted these little raindrops. And so I got to be part of that neat little world. Now, I've had other visions and other communications with them, but it's been more like on a dream plane, which I get information that way. And again, people, well, it was just a dream. Yeah. Okay, that's how we get information. So you can call it a dream and write it off and say it was just a dream. No, that's called communication. Okay, it's communication. So it's a dream communication. That's how I deal with it. But they do communicate, and they do, like in the yard now, it's full of violets. And so what was so funny was earlier, because we don't mow, we try to let the violets go as much, you know, as high as they can for a while, and the whole yard turns to violets. But it's been a process letting it do that. And so now it's quite a good spread of violets. And so my husband said, I think the fairies are happy. He came in. And that had two exterior doors had violets laid down in front of the doors, like, you know, five or six little violets that looked like they had been picked in front of the doors.
Oh.
So kind of a little thank you for us intentionally trying to give them space to do whatever it is they do, work their magic in their world, in their dimension. And, you know, some people see them. I don't see them outside of the dream plane. But I know they're here.
Yes. And so do you leave little treats for them? Do you leave things out? Do you have a fairy circle for them?
No, I have never done anything like that. And I know people do. I know people, you know, build little houses and stuff. I just try to leave parts of the yard unattended so that they have their own space to do whatever it is they want to do.
Sure.
And so I've tried to do that with parts of the yard that I don't mow and I don't walk. I just allow it to be independent.
Well, they must love that. They must appreciate you very much for that.
Apparently, I don't. I think they tolerate us and they find us amusing. I think that's part of it. Is that at least I'm not interfering or trying not to with their progress. And so that's fun. The other thing was that I just had an experience in the last 10 years. It's probably five by now. I think 2013 maybe. Somebody was talking about crystals, and I'd heard about crystals, and I thought, I want to go check out this crystal mine in Mena, Arkansas. And I just had this intuition thing, this driving, compelling need to go there. And I had to interview the people. They did not tell me until I got there that it was also a Sasquatch area. And when I got there, they said, see, this is what they put up in the tree last night. And there's this big, huge, I mean, about three foot diameter log up about 20 feet up in the branches, parallel across the branches of the tree that had happened overnight. And I learned a lot about Sasquatch.
Wow.
So anyway, it's telepathic. And I was gifted with a few things there. At one point, they took me through an area, and they said, this is like, they called it the nursery. And so they walked me through there. At the bottom of each tree in that place was a crystal, a special crystal. So I did pay attention to that. I didn't take anything from that until I was told that I needed to, because they said, tread carefully. I can't remember exactly the words at the moment. But it's basically watch your step as you're walking through here. So I made sure I followed the guy that was in front of me and stayed in his footsteps as we walked through there. And as a thank you, it said, now look down and pick up a rock. I'm like, no, this is telepathic. So I guess I did say no. I did say no. No, because I didn't want to, I thought, you know, I've been through this place. I haven't touched anything. I don't want to pick up anything. And so the third time it said, pick up a rock, then reach down and pick up a rock. I was like, okay, fine. So right at my foot, I picked up a rock. It looked like a rock. On the other side, it's all laid with crystals, and it's shaped like a foot.
Oh, boy.
So the third time, how do they know? How do they know that that's what it took, that it would be three times before I would finally say, okay, I'll pick up something. I, you know, feeling very guilty, like, but I'm being instructed to do this. And the guy, there's no problem. He's, you know, he's the owner of the place, and he's like, yeah, listen to it. So it turned
well,
out.
Well, that's very fairy.
That.
You have to say things three times to fairies. That's so if they will ask you three times, and it, yeah, so you three is a fairy number.
Cool. Okay. Well, then that makes sense. But it was really that was the thing of. Okay, it's a three, and I've done threes all my life. It's a three thing, and if it's a three, then it sets it. It sets whatever it is. It sets it in stone. That's something I've believed in my entire life. I didn't know it was a fairy thing, but yeah, with a three, it's like a cord, and you know you're tying a knot. Whatever it is, you are setting it, and when you say it three times, it is set. So, one of those little fun things that I just felt drawn to and remembered for my whole life. But so, you know, the things like that, there's other stuff, but there's a lot of paranormal that I think when you have downtime, like we've had this past year or so, you have opportunities to connect to it. and be receptive. And, you know, for in terms of spirit guides, if you just open your mind, meditation helps. But if you just open your mind, and they've probably been around most people their entire lives, it's just that they get so caught up with all of the shoulds and musts and have-tos that they can't connect to their own knowing and their own internal compass. And so that's why so many people are trying to figure out this, how does it work? How do I talk to my guides? Am I psychic? Yeah, all of that. It's just a matter of go slow.
Well, now, do you teach courses? Do you counsel people? Are you a mentor?
I have done that in the past, but because of the amount of work that I do with the writing and with the shows, I stopped, and I don't. Occasionally, I'll talk to somebody or I'll work with somebody, but I don't promote myself that way, and it's just very time-consuming. And so for me, it's more fun, and I've because of the shows and editing and you know doing the blogging. My focus has been recently to try and get information out to people who are searching and giving them lots of different directions because we don't all learn the same way at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, so that part of it is trying to give people access points where something may appeal to them. They might like feng shui. They might like qigong. They might like the psychic remote viewing or martial arts of some kind. And if I can say, here, I've interviewed so-and-so, and here's the site, then go here, then they can go find something that works for them with somebody who is teaching and somebody who wants to teach. So
right.
That I think I do a better service that way.
Well, you are amazing. So, Wendy, what are your aspirations? Where will you be in 5 years? Are you going to be doing the same thing, or will you be exploring something new?
Why would I know? I don't have plans that put me in anywhere specific. I think I'll be delighted to find out in about 5 years where I am.
You'll know when you get there.
Right. It'll feel right. Wow, this is where I wanted to be. I didn't know that. I like where I am, and that's part of this is I don't have to be anywhere special. I want to continue doing the blogging and continue learning and continue connecting with people and showcasing people who've done some amazing things, extraordinary things. I mean, that's why I talked to you, because I was so thrilled when I found out the work that you did with your qigong and healing with the heart issue. I mean, that's just absolutely fantastic. And it's worth sharing and worth people knowing. And some of these stories, it's like you can't get that in 40 minutes or an hour. You have to hear, you know, multiple shows. But that the things that you do, you wear many hats and you have many talents. And so that's part of why I was drawn to connect to you. And, you know, it's like at first when you were doing this, it was just some fun books with the pets and trying to train your dog. yeah. So there you go. But, full circle. Anyway, there's some, and I also had remembered Lisa Tenzin Dolma. I had seen her a long time ago, probably 20 or 30 years. She did the tarot, and the tarot was online. One of the first programs that was online that I thought was so fantastic was a special tarot read, and you could do
the
it.
The Glastonbury Tarot, yes, the mm-hmm. Glastonbury Tarot.
Yeah. And so that's how I knew her. And so it was just that, and then she worked with dogs. So, you know, there's just this history of connecting, making connections with people from, you know, the early days of the Internet that I was fortunate enough to, you know, take notes and be in a place to say, you know what, I want to interview some of these people, and this is how I'm going to do it. And just kept pursuing that.
You are an amazing interviewer, a wonderful teacher, a lovely beacon of light that shows the way to so many, and you are all over everywhere. People can find you on KCMO, on Empower Radio, on SoundCloud, on Audio Boom, All Access, and you're even on Amazon. And I'm sure I've just scratched the surface. So we are going to list three places where people can find Wendy's Coffee House, Empower Radio, your podcast, Conscious Living, and oh, my goodness, I mean, just you're an incredible human being. It is an honor to walk the planet with you at the same time. And I just want to thank you for being on the show and for, you know, gracing us with your time. Do you have any closing thoughts or final words you'd like to give us?
All I would say is stay curious. There's so much here that we have yet to uncover and explore. And when you find that magical thing that makes your heart sing, then life goes in a billion new directions. And thank you. Thank you, Keck. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it was a golden opportunity for us to have you on the air, so I thank you for that. Hercules, turn it over
thank
to you.
You
for any thoughts
thank
or comments.
You.
This was a wonderful show, and I didn't want it to end, but the last little good thing from us, so to be continued. Thanks to both of you, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you tuned in live as we're speaking or whether you'll be visiting us later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again.
Yes, and stay curious. I love that. Thank you, Wendy. Good night, Hercules.
Good night.
Thank you.
We have a few seconds. I'm going to close with Golden Bough by Virginia Apple.
Children of fire,
here is